Welcome to the Hoopsite Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. This is episode number 221. We post new episodes twice a week, so be sure to check back and subscribe. Today I'm joined by a former NBA agent who is now a media member. He runs his own website called Babcock Hoops, where he does a great job covering the NBA draft and the NBA as a whole. My guest is Matt Babcock. Matt, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Hey, Alex. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Can't complain. Things are crazy right now in the world, but I'm doing okay. Health is good. No complaints here. It's been a while since we've talked, so I'm excited to pick your brain. Obviously, there's so much going on right now. The NBA is set to return next month at Walt Disney World. This is unlike anything we've ever seen before, so it'll be really interesting to see how this all plays out. As a former agent, I always like to get your perspective on things. So what are your thoughts on the NBA's plan and this bubble idea?
Well, I mean, first of all, it seems like a logistical nightmare. And so, I mean, like everybody else, I'm hoping they're able to pull this through. But, you know, I think it's, like everybody else, it's sort of a, day-to-day type deal. And just sort of fingers crossed that nothing too dramatic negatively happens. Because I want to watch some basketball.
If you were still representing players, how would you handle this period? Because we're hearing some guys may not want to play. We're hearing guys have different concerns about being in the bubble. Obviously, the health concerns, the injury risks. There's a whole lot of things being discussed right now. If you were still representing players, how would you have handled all this?
You know, I mean, it's certainly a tough spot for agents. You know, I think each player's kind of in a unique situation. I mean, most recently with Ariza, you know, he's got a family situation, right? So he's putting family first. You know, as an agent, you know, what I would do with a guy like that is, okay, let's make sure you know what the negative repercussions are for you not going. And, but, you know, if a guy's saying, hey, family first, you can't get in the way of that. But with other guys, I mean, you know, with Bertans, you know, wanting to sit out because his contract is up. I certainly understand that logic. I personally am one to promote guys that, you know, when in doubt to play, you know, whether it be the NBA draft, combine, or workouts or whatnot. I think it's sort of a slippery slope taking the approach of, hey, let's play it safe. Let's not play. Let's protect my stock. My feeling is the best athletes in the world aren't afraid to risk it a little bit. And so, you know, that's just my general approach on it.
Yeah, I spoke to Bertans' agent, Arturis Kalnidis, and we were talking about this whole situation. He tried to explain, you know, where Bertans is coming from, and he basically said, we have an insurance policy, so if he were to get injured, then, you know, he would get a check, but the injury risk is scary. He said, we're not the only ones that are concerned about this. There are other players, and I talked to other agents that have the same concern about the injury risk, and he even said, he was pretty honest, he said, you know, it wasn't a hard decision. He said if the Wizards had been the 8th seed, or especially if they were, you know, the 5th or 6th seed, then Bertans would have played. But with where Washington is at, being, you know, 5.5 games behind the 8th seeded Orlando Magic, they just didn't want to risk it for games that are essentially meaningless. And I know Washington has a similar stance where they've said all year long the wins and losses don't really matter. John Wall is supposedly 110% healthy, according to him, but he's going to sit out as well. So I think just with the circumstances and that team and the situation that they're in, you know, it made sense, and the Wizards were apparently very supportive. But I am curious to see, you know, with some of these teams that are in the playoff mix, are we going to see guys saying, look, I don't want to risk it, either for the health reasons or the injury risk? You know, guys have been away for 4 months. Whenever they return, it'll have been 4 months, and there's a lot of risk there because you can't really mimic those game movements and game intensity when you're working out alone. So a lot of guys are concerned we're going to see a lot of serious injuries. So if you were, I mean, let's talk about that for a second. How many players do you think we'll see end up sitting out? And how will that be? I mean, I feel like a lot of fans were already giving Bertans a lot of crap for not playing. It'll be interesting to see the reaction to that as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there's certainly going to be some negative backlash for guys that sit out. I mean, again, I understand the logic with him. I mean, they're probably not going to be a playoff team. But on the flip side of that, I mean, I think, you know, with everybody sitting at home without any sports on, all of these games are going to be watched by everybody. So, I kind of look at it as an opportunity and a stage for these guys to earn more. I mean, pretty much every single athlete in the world all wants more. And so, an opportunity to show the world what you got. I would take it personally, but no disrespect to Bertans at all.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I know a lot of guys are concerned about the bubble. And in addition to the COVID and injury risks, there's obviously a lot of players now saying that they feel like it would be a distraction. They don't want to distract from the Black Lives Matter movement. Whereas other players, as you mentioned, because it is such a big platform and big stage, guys like Ed Davis or Garrett Temple are saying, no, let's use this huge platform to go out there and support the cause and support the movement and use the money that we make to donate it. So it'll be interesting. The deadline for players to choose not to play is June 24th, which is tomorrow as we're recording this. So a lot of players are going to have to make that decision and notify their team by tomorrow. So we'll see if it's a handful of guys or if it's a lot of guys. Hopefully it's only a handful, but it is a tough decision. I've been saying this all along in recent weeks on this podcast. It's a lot for your employer to ask you to go stay in a bubble and basically just work and go to a hotel for 3.5 months straight. That's a big ask for an employer.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, my cousin's assistant coach for the Sixers, he and I have been talking about it quite a bit, and just some of the protocols. I mean, it's going to be pretty rough. I mean, you're very isolated. A lot of these guys are younger and single and are used to socializing and whatnot. And I think this is probably going to benefit the guys that are sort of homebodies and like to stay home and play video games, because it's probably what they'll be doing in their hotel room. So definitely a weird time, but hopefully it goes smoothly.
For sure, yeah. It'll be interesting to see how guys spend that time. I had Sam Amick on the podcast the last episode, and we talked about the different things that Disney and the NBA are going to offer players in the bubble for entertainment. Things like golfing, stand-up comedy, DJ sets. They have a bunch of board games and a whole players' lounge with different video games and things like that. So it's going to be a long time, and I know families can't come join the guys until apparently the second round of the playoffs. So even if you are going to have your family there eventually, guys are going a significant amount of time away from their family and friends. So yeah, it'll be tough. But this podcast recently spent so much time talking about logistical things and things that aren't basketball related. So let's talk some basketball for a second. Now that basketball is almost back, there's different things that, you know, we're excited about, that we're curious to see. We each picked three storylines or things that we're looking forward to watching. So let's go back and forth here. And I'll start with my first thing that I'm interested in seeing. You know, once basketball's back, I'm curious to see who will have benefited most from this break. Will it be the veterans? You know, there have been a number of trainers I've talked to who have said, because veterans know what to do to stay in shape, they know how to take care of their body, they don't really rely as much on their trainers and their coaches. Whereas a rookie or a younger player is constantly needing to know, you know, hear from their coaches to know what to do. They need help from nutritionists. They don't know really how to take care of their body because they're still pretty new in the league. They have to really learn a lot of this stuff. Whereas, you know, guys like LeBron James, for example, we hear about how he spends $1.5 million annually to take care of his body. Not only does he have a court and a gym at his own place, he has a hyperbaric chamber, he has a cryotherapy thing, he has all these different things and people around him that are going to make sure his body's in great shape for when he returns to the NBA, returns to the season. So it's going to be interesting to see who kind of comes out of this struggling and who doesn't. You know, as I mentioned, it's hard to mimic those game movements and intensity at home. So I think the guys that have access to a court are going to have a huge edge. There was one team in the Eastern Conference, and I won't say which team it was, but their trainer, their strength and conditioning coach and their trainer told me that they don't have a single player on their team that has access to a court. They were trying to help their guys find gyms and football fields and tracks that were near their house so that they can get some extra workouts in. But all their guys were just working out at home or in their apartment with, you know, different equipment. So a team like that doesn't have a single guy that had access to a court or a basket of any kind, they're going to be so rusty when they come back. Whereas, you know, you look at some of these teams, I know LeBron and Anthony Davis have had access to a court. Whenever Patrick Patterson was on, he said that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Lou Williams each have a court at their house. So those guys are going to be, you know, fine. They're not going to be as rusty. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, who benefited from this break. Again, I think some guys could get really injured because they've been away from basketball for so long. But the guys that had the resources, the access to a court, access to their own gym, and were able to kind of stay in shape, and the veterans that know what to do during this time, I think they're going to have a huge advantage whenever play resumes.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I mean, I think especially early on when the pandemic really hit here and everybody was really contained, there was a number of guys that weren't given access to gyms. From my understanding, most guys have been playing pickup or working out. And you know, the biggest thing for me is not as much, you know, a younger player compared to a veteran. It's more of who are the self-starters, you know, who's going out there and getting it done on their own. I talked to one of my other cousins who's with the Atlanta Hawks coaching staff, and their team's filled with a bunch of young guys, and he said their guys were in great shape. I mean, they've got nothing else to do, so they're all lifting weights and working out. I think it's probably a case by case deal. You got different personalities, different work ethics and whatnot, but we'll probably see, it'll be very, very evident who's been putting the work in and taking care of themselves.
Yeah, it's kind of like after a lockout when everyone's curious, okay, who's actually been working out and staying in shape and who's been saying, I'll put work in next week, I'll put work in the week after that, and then don't actually do it. It'll be interesting to see who's been working. And like you said, yeah, being a self-starter, holding yourself accountable because you aren't going to see your trainer or your coaches every day. At least during a lockout, you can go to your training facility and work out with a bunch of other, professional athletes. With this, it's been you're on your own and you're holding yourself accountable. So it'll be interesting. Dave Hancock, who was the performance coach for the New York Knicks for a while. Now he trains Kevin Durant and some others. He was saying the guys that he's most worried about are the youngest guys, the rookies and stuff that, don't really have that professional mindset maybe yet and need to lean on their trainers. And then the oldest guys, because they're at really big injury risk, their bodies require a lot. He's like, the guys in the middle are the ones that I think are really going to come out and be great. And I mean, the young guys too, they could just roll out of bed and start playing basketball. That's one of the benefits of being young. The question is, did they stay in shape and communicate with their coaches and trainers a lot during this time? But yeah, that'll be interesting. What's the first thing that you're most interested to see whenever the NBA returns?
Just live basketball. Basketball is such the main part of my life outside of my wife and kids, and it's just having that taken away, it's been a huge adjustment. And so just seeing competitive basketball, obviously that's a simple answer, but that's the absolute truth.
We talked about this last night when we were kind of texting back and forth, but what are the playoff matchups that you're looking forward to watching? I think it's so exciting to think that playoff basketball could be here soon. We've had no sports for so long that I know people are watching like Korean League Baseball and different Madden streams and things like that. We've all got really desperate, but what playoff matchups are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, first, but my dad's been with the Bucks for 23 years. And so, I mean, all of those matchups, I'm going to be rooting hard for his team. I mean, after this long in the NBA, it's his real shot of getting in a ring. And so I'm excited to watch them. I think a Lakers-Clippers matchup would be pretty neat. Battle of LA. And then, seeing what, if Zion can get the Pelicans in.
Yeah, Zion is the one that I'm really excited to see. I'm curious to see what that team looks like. Zion, through his 19 games, he's just been ridiculous. It's insane to see what Zion was able to do in those first 19 games. He was shooting the ball insanely well, being super efficient. I mean, the guy was shooting 46.2% from three, 58.9% from the field. I mean, and I think people were expecting him to have a slow start because he had been injured. He was adjusting to the NBA speed and competition. And then all of a sudden comes out averaging 23.6 points, 6.8 rebounds, 2.2 assists, shooting the ball insanely well. I mean, obviously he's going to regress a bit and come back down to earth because those shooting marks aren't sustainable. But, can he take this team to the playoffs? The Pelicans right now, they're only 3.5 games out from the eighth seed in the Western Conference. They're behind the Memphis Grizzlies and the Portland Trailblazers. There was a lot of talk whenever the NBA was coming up with this plan and, figuring out who they were going to invite to Orlando. People were thinking, oh, they're trying to get Zion out there for the TV ratings and all that. And it makes sense. I mean, you have this up-and-coming star that the league wants to market. And if they can make him be a part of this, then, they're going to do it. So they invited every team that was at least 6 games out from the eighth seed. That includes the Pelicans. And I mean, this Pelicans team has been playing better as the season has went on. Obviously, once they got Zion back, they had so many new pieces on that team. All the guys from the Lakers that came over, all the veterans they brought in, guys like Derek Favors and JJ Redick, they had a lot of new faces. So they got off to a slow start, but they've been playing better recently. It'll be really interesting to see if Zion can get this team, Zion and all the veterans there, can get this team into the playoffs, because that Lakers Pelicans matchup that we could get in the first round would be so much fun. How much would you look forward to a Lakers Pelicans first round matchup?
Oh, I mean, you read my mind. That's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, and think about the irony of you got Anthony Davis playing against New Orleans, and Zion's the new star in town. And if Zion's healthy, I mean, he's a problem. And so, I mean, I'm sure the Lakers are not wanting to face them that early. It definitely would be exciting. I mean, just as a fan, that would be just so much fun to watch.
Yeah, the NBA is salivating over that thought. LeBron versus Zion, Anthony Davis against his old team, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart against their old team. That would be just a ton of fun. So we'll see if that happens. I know one thing that you and I were talking about is how the pandemic will affect the NBA draft. I know we're both curious to see what's going to happen with the 2020 NBA draft. When you look at, you do a lot of great draft coverage for Babcock Hoops, and I love reading your scouting reports and your breakdowns. When you look at how the pandemic will affect the draft, what are some things that you're kind of focusing on?
Well, I mean, it's been frustrating. I mean, from our standpoint, teams, agents, players, all the way around, because pre-draft process essentially is doubled in time, but there's not much to do. I mean, from an agent standpoint, you're having to spend twice as much money housing these guys, training and whatnot, and then you're not able to schedule workouts and be much influence on that end. And the same thing, frustrations with the players, and then for teams, you're not able to collect any new data points other than Zoom calls and just doing extensive video work and intel calls. But you can only do that so much. And so we're kind of at the point now. They moved the draft back to October 16th, and we kind of feel like we're spinning our wheels a little bit. So it's a very weird year in that regard, that there's so much more time to do everything, but there's not as much to do. And so yeah, just a very, very unique time right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see how the NBA adjusts. We kind of saw this with the NFL draft, where there were a lot of Zoom interviews, virtual workouts, which I know there's been some NBA prospects that have talked about doing a virtual workout and showing the entire thing, not edited, because obviously if you're editing it and only showing your makes or whatever, it's not very valuable. So I know there's some lottery prospects that are talking about doing a virtual workout and, setting it out so that not only GMs and scouts and everything can see it, but also fans. So yeah, I'm curious to see how the pre-draft process is impacted. Do you think we're going to have a combine?
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to at least try to do something. I mean, if anything, getting the guys together so you can get some physical testing and medicals. Because I mean, if these teams are having to go into the draft night without medical information, that's just a huge problem. I mean, asking these owners to spend millions of dollars on guys and if you don't know if they're banged up or not. And then, if they're able to play, that really would help some of the guys that haven't established their draft market. I mean, for example, last year, Duan Hernandez from Miami, who didn't get invited to the combine off the bat, but he got invited to the G League Elite Camp, did really well there, earned a spot at the combine, did well there, and then got drafted. And he was a guy before the combine. I didn't think he was going to get drafted at all. And so guys like that, sort of need that opportunity to impress, full staffs. And so I hope they at least get the medical information. And if they're able to play, that should help some players too.
Yeah, that's a good point. The medical stuff is so important. We kind of saw that with the NFL free agency. Certain guys that have those medical red flags, they had trouble finding offers. Cam Newton is still out there. He's still a free agent right now in the NFL, and I think the medical side is a big reason for that. Todd Gurley signed with the Atlanta Falcons, and then he couldn't get a physical for months. So I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. When we talk about the draft, who's impacted the most? The guys that have any kind of medical red flags are definitely going to be affected, especially if teams can't have their own doctor evaluate a guy, because that's when some of those red flags pop up. I also think the guys, maybe you may disagree about this, but guys that are high potential, high upside guys, typically I think those guys do well in workouts, and then a team falls in love with them during a workout and thinks, oh, this guy has a ton of potential. But with if there's no workouts this year, I'm curious how teams are going to evaluate players. Do they just rely more on game film and say, look, we have to just go safe here, we don't want to go with the boom or bust guy? Do they rely on guys that have great game film from college, or more game film? In the recent years, we've seen so many freshmen and sophomore, those guys get drafted so much higher because they have more upside and they're younger. Could you see teams evaluating players differently because they don't have the workouts and it's not a normal year?
Yeah, no, I could see that. I mean, as I mentioned before, I mean, there's less opportunity to gather new data points. I mean, you're pretty much having to lean on all the background work in film. And so it's probably going to be a deal where I think some people are overanalyzing guys. I mean, you watch too much film, it could drive you nuts. And so I'm trying to do my best of watching everything, but not getting nitpicky too. And then, I think, really where this could affect things a lot is some of these underclassmen that are on the fence, whether they stay in the draft or not. A couple guys that come to mind, Isaiah Joe from Arkansas or Robert Woodard from Mississippi State. I mean, both these guys are really good players that would likely get drafted in solid spots, but they're on the fence. And so they don't really have an opportunity of getting any new information. And I don't know if teams are willing to give guarantees right now. And I think guys like that, I could see a number of these guys that maybe in some years would stay in the draft, do go back to school just because they're not able to get teams to a comfort level to give them some assurances.
One thing I'm curious about seeing is if there are a lot of picks that get sold off for cash considerations, if teams are in smaller markets or their owners hurting financially, do we see teams, you know, trade away a pick that maybe they normally would have used, especially second round picks? You know, do teams just say, look, we don't need that extra player, let's just take the cash considerations? You know, I'm curious if that happens. And one thing I did hear too during the NFL draft process, some of the reporters were saying that there was a lot less groupthink because you didn't have a ton of executives, you know, and scouts seeing each other at all these different events. You know, usually you're going from one pre-draft workout to another to a pro day, and in the combine is the same thing, and you're all together. So there's a lot of groupthink that kind of ends up happening. You know, are those two things that you think could be different this year? The, you know, seeing teams maybe sell off some picks and less groupthink?
Well, as far as the selling off picks, I think there's two ways of looking at it. I mean, in one way, okay, you know, cash is king. You know, sell a pick for, you know, a couple million bucks. That's money in the door. But the other way of looking at it is you're able to secure a guy on a multi-year contract on the cheap. And so, I mean, really, I think it would be fiscally responsible to draft guys with second round picks and try and sign them to 3-4 year deals where you have control of them. And that'd be a better way of managing your cap. As far as like the groupthink deal, all these front offices seem to be communicating regularly, Zoom conference calls and talking on the phone. So I don't think that's as big of an issue, or big of a change. But, you know, we'll see. And then there's the draft process is so much longer now. So, I mean, there's so much more opportunity to have all these discussions, and nobody has anything to do. Nobody's traveling. Nobody's going to these events. So, I mean, you know, it's probably a lot of guys getting on the phone comparing notes.
Yeah, that's a good point. It'll be interesting. You know, this is definitely a unique year. We'll see what happens with the draft. We'll see if there's a summer league. I think, you know, obviously there will be a draft, but will there be a summer league, and will there be workouts and other pre-draft things that happen? Who knows? It'll be interesting to see. The next thing that I'm excited to see is, you know, which injured players may return and make a big impact. We know that Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and even John Wall aren't playing. You know, KD and Kyrie have been ruled out, and John Wall has said repeatedly, we wrote an article on Hoopsite recently, you know, he said he was 110% healthy, but repeatedly he has said, I'm not going to play. I'm not coming back this year. I'm going to play next year. They're just being extra cautious with him. And again, you know, as you mentioned, Washington doesn't seem like they're going to be a playoff team, so they don't really have a big reason to rush him back. But so those guys are ruled out. It would have been really interesting if we got KD and Kyrie back and playing, but there are a number of guys that could be returning, guys like Blake Griffin, Jonathan Isaac, Yusuf Nurkic. You know, could those guys come back and give their team a boost? With some of those guys, there have been questions about whether or not they'll be ready. Jonathan Isaac, there was some talk that he could play, then the Magic were saying, oh, we're not really sure. I think Nurkic will play for sure. I think he'll be back. Or Blake Griffin, even. The timetable for the injury, they were initially being ruled out for the season, but with a four-month break, now you kind of line it up, and they were being ruled out a certain amount of time. I think it was 7 months or something like that. And now, you know, it's been right about there, right about the amount of time that they were being ruled out. So we'll see if they're able to come back and make a return. But it's just so rare to see guys that are ruled out for the season be able to suddenly come back and finish the regular season and enter the playoffs and be able to make an impact. So that's one benefit for these teams that had a big injury. You know, a four-month break obviously helps them. You know, obviously we could see their teams be extra cautious, and because they haven't been able to rehab or stay in any kind of shape because they've been hurt, maybe their teams don't throw them back out there, because I know there's a lot of fear whenever there's playoff intensity, throwing guys out there that maybe aren't in game shape or aren't ready, you know, you could have some serious injuries. But it'll be interesting to see who can come back and make an impact for their team.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely be interesting. I think it's hard to make a blanket statement on injuries in general in this kind of case. It depends on the injury, depends on, you know, the player's body type, you know, age, all that kind of stuff. And another part of it too is I don't think it's always a situation where the dialogue behind closed doors is talking about, okay, what does this do for my contract status? Sometimes guys just miss the game, you know. So if they're healthy enough to go, they're going to get out there just because they love playing. And so, I mean, I think it's a case by case deal, and we'll see.
For sure, yeah. So looking at these, some of these specifics, Blake Griffin, it's interesting because they have said he'd be healthy in June. At the same time, the Pistons are kind of rebuilding. They might hold him out and just be safe. But then, you know, guys like Jonathan Isaac, 3 weeks ago, he said he may be able to return. He wasn't wearing his knee brace anymore, was, you know, got off crutches. Orlando execs were saying that, you know, it's a possibility, but he might miss the season. Isaac is kind of, Isaac and Al-Farouq Aminu in Orlando, both of those are kind of up in the air. 8 weeks ago, Aminu had surgery, and Orlando said he'd be reevaluated in 12 weeks. So that kind of puts a timetable right around, you know, a month from now. So maybe it's possible that he can play. We'll see which guys can come back. Obviously, some of these injuries are worse than others, but it'll be interesting to see who can make a return. I know the last thing that you were looking forward to, Matt, was what's going to happen at this neutral site. What are some things you're looking forward to and curious about, you know, what's going to happen at a neutral site?
Well, I mean, I think losing home court advantage is really, really a big thing here. I mean, if you're the Lakers or the Bucks, you got the number one slot in your conference. I mean, you know, having those home games, I mean, it's just such a huge advantage. I mean, it's hard to go on the road for a team and face a top team and beat them at their house. And so now take the fans out of the picture. You take the, you know, the home court out of the picture, and it kind of makes for a little bit more parity. So it should be interesting. I mean, kind of, you know, I think you mentioned this, is kind of makes it a little bit more like a March Madness type environment, where you're a neutral site and, you know, just get out there and compete.
Yeah, I mean, with no fans, it'll be interesting. Do you think we could see more upsets? Because home court advantage is such a big deal, not only because you have the fans freaking out and, you know, adding the pressure to the opposing players, but also because when guys are at home, they have their own routine, they're more comfortable, they're used to the basket. There's so many different things that home court advantage is, you know, why it's an edge for teams. And there's been studies that show teams play better at home. I mean, we have seen that. So not only just because you're used to the court and everything, but having that game day routine, being at home, and then also the fan reaction with no fans, no home court advantage, could you see there being more upsets?
Yeah, it's possible. You know, I think the guys that are really going to thrive here are the mentally tough. I mean, the guys, you know, probably good practice players, right? Guys that are competitive, you know, even when the bright lights aren't on and the fans aren't there. Players like that, I think, are the ones that are going to shine here. Certain players, you know, are more of are gamers, you know, that feed off the fans and the energy. So it'll be interesting to see, like, how different guys adjust. You know, again, obviously I'm biased with the Bucks because of my dad, but I think this is going to be a benefit for Giannis, because that guy is just a killer. It doesn't matter if they're fans there or not, that guy is going to compete. And so guys like that, I think, will shine.
Yeah, Giannis came to mind. Damian Lillard, a guy like that who just seems super mentally tough and clutch, comes to mind. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see which guys step up and which guys, you know, struggle a bit, because it's kind of like I talked about this with Sam Amick, but this is almost like the G League Showcase or Orlando Summer League back whenever they used to have that, when there were no fans in the building. You know, it can be tough to play in that environment. I think guys get used to having the fans and everything. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what this looks like. And also just from a, you know, a fan standpoint, being able to watch on TV, are we going to hear more trash talk, and, you know, or are they going to pipe the crowd noise in so that we can't hear those things? Honestly, I would love to hear that stuff. I think one of the coolest things about this job is being able to sit, you know, baseline and hear these guys trash talking and hear what's being said by the bench and all of that. You know, I think that's super interesting. I think fans would love to hear it too. So I hope that, you know, they don't pump in too much crowd noise to the point where we can't hear what's happening on the court and hear guys interacting, because that's really special. That can make this postseason super interesting if for the first time we can hear very clearly what all the guys are saying, you know, when there are these super high stakes. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
No, I agree. And that's, I mean, that's one reason I love NBA Summer League. You know, it's very intimate. You know, I mean, it's a great competitive basketball. And now it's gotten to the point where there's so many fans, but it's still, I mean, you get, you know, up close and personal look at some of these top young players. And so I think it's going to be very similar to NBA Summer League.
For sure. At this point, you know, we're just excited for basketball. We'll take anything, even if there's pumped in crowd noise or whatever. I'm not going to be picky. I'm just excited to see some sports again. I hope everything, you know, goes through smoothly and there's not any issues or positive cases or anything like that, just because that would be so devastating for those players, obviously, and everyone involved. But it would also just be so frustrating, and, you know, we'd have to go even longer without sports. And honestly, I think if this bubble situation doesn't work in Orlando, there's a possibility possibility that we lose the 2020-21 season too, just because a lot of these same things have to be in place. If this doesn't work, then I don't see a scenario where come December, every team just goes back to their market and everything's back to normal and you can just travel again and play all these different games. It just seems, you know, December's not that far away. And with everything they're saying about how long it takes to come up with a vaccine and all that stuff, I don't know if there's a scenario where, you know, come December, everything's back to normal. So hopefully this bubble idea works. And then hopefully, you know, if it's a huge success, then they can maybe replicate that and have multiple bubbles around the country or something like that so that next season can be a bit more normal. But I don't think there's a way for them to just have it go 100% back to normal.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. I sure hope it gets back to normal soon, though. I'm going nuts. I need to go watch some college games or something. And you know, we'll see. I mean, I think the one thing that's going to make it somewhat easier is just with all these teams chartering. I mean, you probably could execute it without fans in December. That would be my guess. But let's see how this goes. Again, it's sort of a day-by-day type of thing.
Yeah, I'm getting way too ahead of myself here thinking about right. Next season. Hopefully this just happens without a hitch, and then we go from there. Before we wrap up here, I want to talk about what you're doing at Babcock Hoops. I've noticed that your staff changed a bit since we had you on the show last time. You know, tell us about some of the new people that you have involved over there and what's new.
Yeah, so when I first launched Babcock Hoops, you know, I assembled a team of former NBA scouts, and you know, it's been somewhat of a revolving door, which is great because we really wanted to create an infrastructure to help guys accomplish their goals and, you know, get new jobs and whatnot. And so when we first started, I still have Jason Felipe on staff, who's our director of international operations, who lives in Bologna, Italy, and he's the best in the business. I can't believe a team hasn't snagged him up yet. But he's with us. He's got 20 years NBA experience. And then we had Luca Desta worked with us for a while, and he got snagged up by the Lakers. He's working with the Lakers front office now. Jeff Feld is now the general manager of the Phoenix Suns G League team. And then Matt McKay Jr., he and I worked together to build up Pro Insight. It's a college scouting service. Once we got it operational, I sold him back my part. Now he's focused in on that. And then I've added some guys. So we've got Doc Martin, a former player who played at Alabama and then worked 15 years in the NBA for Portland and New Orleans. He's now our director of basketball operations. And then Fran Fraschilla, who I don't need to introduce him. He and I've known him since I was a kid because he was friends with my dad when they were both college coaches. He and I, the last couple of years, have become really friendly, and he's kind of turned into a mentor for me. So I called him in the fall, and I said, hey, you know, coach, I really love picking your brain and talking hoops. You know, would you have any interest in formalizing the relationship? And so I asked him to be a senior advisor, and he agreed, which was great news for me.
Yeah, wow.
And so, you know, kind of how that relationship works. I mean, he's not in the trenches with us on a day-to-day basis, but I call him every so often and use him as a sounding board. And you know, whether it be just, you know, pick his brain on players or, you know, career advice or, you know, whatever. And just a huge addition for me. And then we had a few younger people that are, you know, kind of up and coming stars. Jeremy Berman was a student manager at Texas and then had stints with the Hornets and the Spurs. Just a really sharp guy. He's our director of research and analysis, and he's written a number of really intelligent pieces for us. And then we added Derek Murray. Interesting story with him. I was scouting R.J. Hampton. The New Zealand Breakers were playing some exhibition games against NBA teams in the preseason. So I'm in Oklahoma City watching R.J., and I posted a tweet that I was there watching the game, and Derek follows me. You know, sent me a direct message, asked if he'd come introduce himself. Talked for 15 minutes. I just really liked the guy. He was really passionate about pursuing a job and scouting. So I created a position for him to be a video scout, and he's just done a terrific job. And then most recently, we looked to expand by adding some video content. And so we hired Raquel Rodriguez to be a reporter. And the story there is sort of funny. So my wife and I both went to the University of Arizona. My wife was captain of the Palm Line, and one of her teammates is now the head coach of the Palm Line. And so I reached out to her, asked if she had any former team members that, you know, kind of took the broadcast journalism route. And so she introduced me to Raquel, who was a cheerleader at U of A. And Raquel's dad is Rich Rodriguez, the former head coach at U of A football.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's brought her on. So now we've got, you know, I've got a great balance of, you know, experienced guys like Jason, Doc, and Fran, and then some younger blood too. So we really got a great setup here, and we're really just trying to generate some more content covering the draft. And life's good working with good people and watching basketball and talking basketball all day. Life's good.
Awesome. Yeah, I saw you did some stuff for CBS Sports too, that you were serving as an NBA draft analyst with them. Is that something you're going to keep doing?
Yeah, and I've been talking with them. I did the one show. We did a simulated mock draft with a number of their guys, and they said they'd like me to come back on and do some more stuff. Obviously, with the draft being pushed back till October, I think everything's sort of on the back burner at the moment. But yeah, and I think I'll probably do some more stuff with them.
Awesome. And I know we've talked about this before, but we see so many guys make that jump from agent to executive in the NBA. So much of your family works in the NBA or worked in the NBA. You obviously could make the agent to media to NBA jump. Is that something that you're interested in doing at all?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in that. I mean, I was surprised I had ever ended up being an agent, you know? And so the plan was always to work in the NBA. This media stuff is really kind of taking on a life of its own. So I'm really enjoying it. And so I'm kind of at the point now where I'm always going to be interested in going to the NBA, but I need to kind of wait for the right spots, work with the right people. But yeah, I think I'll probably do it at some point, just a matter of when.
Well, awesome, man. I wish you the best of luck. Everyone, make sure you're following Matt on Twitter at MattBabcock11. Make sure you check out Babcock Hoops. He has a ton of great stuff going on over there. Matt, thanks so much for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Alex. Keep in touch.
Definitely. Stay safe. Things are crazy right now, so stay safe and keep in touch as well. If you guys want to hear more episodes of the Hoopsite podcast, check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere your favorite podcasts are found. And until next time, thanks for listening.